instead of people saying, hey, can I have your autograph? Do they now say, hey, you're helping me win my fantasy league? I mean, to me, that is so overrun American society. Oh, 37 man. Million people are playing fantasy football right now. How much of that do you hear?
All the time. All I hear about is fantasy football. No matter who it is, no matter which team that person likes, they like the Eagles. If they like Tampa Bay, they are more happy that I won them their fantasy game than their favorite team losing. And that's all I hear.
It's the MMQB Podcast with Peter King.
Subscribe and listen to new and archived episodes wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Week 8 was a wild one. Not the most beautiful football, but lots of excitement. Matt Ryan over Aaron Rodgers in a shootout. Raiders overcome 10,000 penalties in Tampa. And while you were wasting time watching the World Series, the Eagles and Cowboys were playing a Sunday Night Classic. All that and much, much more in the MMQB 10 Things podcast.
The MMQB presents the MMQB 10 Things podcast, powered by digital media. Find your voice. And now, your hosts, Andy Benoit and Gary Gramling.
Hello and welcome to the MMQB 10 Things podcast. Week 8 is done. It was exciting. There were exciting finishes, maybe not the most beautiful football ever played, but the games were close, and interesting things happened, and we are going to jump right into it. I am Gary Gramling. I'm here with Andy Benoit. Andy, are you coming down from another Sunday night overtime game?
Yeah, I am, and just to keep the conversation, the topic flowing, I texted you again, said I'm starting overtime, I'm going to be late. You didn't even text back this time, which I think is an improvement still.
But I didn't.
The ultimate safer than sorry.
Oh, it was out of spite. It was an angry untext. Actually, I just didn't get your text until we were about to record.
But yeah, that was a great Sunday night game, wasn't it?
It was, and let's start right there. Let's officially brand it.
Number one.
Topic number one, the Sunday nighter. Cowboys come back, beat the Eagles in overtime. Andy, I think we're going to slightly disagree on one thing. I wasn't crazy about Dak Prescott's performance. Obviously, he got it done in the end. And look, the Eagles are a very good defense, so I don't want to discount him too much. But I thought he was a little all over the place for the first 53 minutes of this game. And you know, even that Dez Bryant touchdown, that's Dez making a play more than Dak making a throw, though I guess you got to give your guy a chance. But anyways, talk to me about what did you think of Dak Prescott in this one?
I think what stood out was his mobility, which we all know is a big part of his game, but the way the mobility impacted the game, even on the final play, the touchdown to Witten. And by the way, Witten did an unbelievable job of uncovering late in that play and going scramble drill. He's the reason the safeties ran into each other. He set that. Not that he knew that's what would happen, but he set up his redirect very well, and it went perfectly for him. And on that play, Elliott extended the action, something Romo's done before, so it's not like that's totally new to Dallas, but we saw some read options. We saw some very effective scrambles. Prescott, of course. He's such a smooth scrambler. So I was impressed with him. Now, that's not true quarterbacking, though, and you're right, Gary. There are elements of his game that were lacking in this one tonight. And he has moments where he, and this is to be expected with any rookie, tonight it led to an interception and also a few missed throws on the field, just guys not being targeted. But he has moments where he just doesn't see things quite clearly enough. And that's to be totally expected with a young player. To his credit, though, there are some guys where they have moments they don't see things clearly, and the action breaks down. Colin Kaepernick, for example, the second it's not clear to him, he becomes randomized, and you don't know what you're going to get. When Prescott has moments of unclarity, he doesn't try to find a quick answer. He stays patient and calm and works his way through it so he can navigate those own storms. He had the interception in the end zone. That was a rare instance for him. He didn't see it clearly, and he did make a quick decision. But all the other times, he navigates through his own mistakes so well.
Yeah, I thought he missed a couple of really open receivers in the middle of the field. There was that one that NBC showed of Cole Beasley kind of standing with no one, pretty you know, about 8 yards out with no one within about 10 yards of him. And there were another couple where Witten was wide open in the middle of the field, and Dak just wasn't seeing him. And he did get away with a couple of throws that hit Eagles defenders in the chest and in the hands that maybe should have gone the other way and didn't quite. But look, he made plays in the end. And like you said, the scramble stuff is really where he shines, and that's what made the game-winning play. That and Jason Witten doing a little Three Stooges thing with the Eagles safeties.
Yeah,
maybe a little bit of a push, Alf. Maybe a little bit of a push.
You think
off.
So? I don't know. I don't think so. Very subtle, and which is the name of the game.
And you know what? And this is what I say, because I saw some of those complaints on Twitter. But if Jason Witten pushed off, Jason Witten would call the penalty on himself because he's that.
Oh, because he calls his own fouls per the rules of our show here.
That's how it works per the rules of the NFL. Jason Witten carries a flag with him. He will flag himself if he thinks it's necessary. What do you think of Carson Wentz on the other end? It was a real struggle for the Eagles. I mean, they were just moving through quicksand for the first half, and they kind of opened things up in the second half. But I like what Wentz did. Those receivers, man. They're just not very good.
He doesn't have great receivers. No, but in that system, they can scheme around that. That's the same thing. Peterson had the same thing in Kansas City. They don't have great wide receivers there either. I mean, Macklin's good and not more than
great,
good. He's good.
But we're talking less than not great in Philly right now.
Well, no, I agree with you, but it's such a – really, the more they've played this season, the more – and this sounds like it has negative connotations. It's not meant that way. This is strictly a commentary on the style of play. But the more they've played, the more dink and dunk oriented they've become this year. Everything Wentz throws, it feels like, is underneath, balls out quickly. Now, they have to play that way a little bit because their offensive line isn't what it was. Vitae at right tackle, he has been better than he was in his debut a few weeks ago, but he's still a fifth-round rookie who you didn't plan on having on the field. Jason Peters is slowing down at left tackle. Kelsey struggles with bigger opponents. That's more in the run game, but it's not a great offensive line, and then you don't have receivers who are dynamic and can win on their own, so you're going to play at the shorter levels and try to win through angles and timing and small ball your way through it. And I think Wentz has been very good in that regard. I think he gets to his second read very efficiently, which is important in that kind of a scheme. Yeah. I was happy with the way he played tonight. I also think Darren Sproles is becoming a bigger part of what they do because he fits what they do. If it's a dink and dunk offense built on screens and misdirections, then who would you rather have in there? Darren Sproles or Barner or Matthews or your guy Smallwood who had the fumble tonight? Sproles is going to become the answer there.
Smallwood made a fool of me tonight. Yeah, that was and that was another thing about this game. The Cowboys, they got two breaks in the second half, and they turned them into field goals, which, and look, at that point in the game, it was sort of on the verge of getting away. They had the, I don't even know if that was a fake punt or Chris Jones just sort of, thought it was going to get blocked and took off around the left end, but that drive ended up getting them 3 points, and then obviously Smallwood comes in, and all the fumble problems Ryan Matthews had late in games throughout the season, Smallwood comes in and really soft fumble too. Didn't really get it stripped, just sort of a feeble punch out. And Cowboys turned that into 3 points. That's how you get to overtime when you're not playing that well. And they took advantage in OT. I actually had one more thing on this game. We'll have a full mailbag later, but Scott B. from Anoka, Minnesota, which he claims is the Halloween capital of the world, and we will believe
it is. I just saw that on History Channel last night.
Is it really?
I just saw that. Yeah, I watched a Halloween special on Saturday night, and he's right. That is the Halloween capital. That's really cool. What did he have to say?
Well, there you go. Tis the season for Halloween. But he asks, what's going to happen in the offseason with the Romo situation? Is he tradable? Does he come back as a backup? And obviously, this is all speculation at this point. And it's a very fluid situation. If Dak Prescott had a performance like this against a Browns and then I don't know who they have coming up next, but maybe the conversation swings back to, does Romo go back in? But I would think Romo's contract is not tradable, but I would think if Romo wants out, if he wants to play, if he is the number two quarterback in Dallas and wants to be a number one quarterback elsewhere, he will restructure that deal and they will find a home for him. I don't know where that home would be, but someone would be interested in starting him, presumably.
I think that is so far. I think we got to keep this. It's already this first step in the one step at a time process is already too hard for me. Is who plays next, Romo or Prescott? And I'm happy to kick the can down the road another week and just say Dallas has the Browns next week. It's probably going to be Prescott. Romo's not all the way back, and that's what they're doing there in Dallas.
Well, there you go. That's a real non-answer, Andy.
Yes, that is.
But we did learn about the capital of Halloween.
Number two.
The Falcons win a shootout with the Packers. This is a big comeback. Lots of offense in this game. It was, you know, I've been, and this is always the storyline with the Packers, I'm still skeptical of the Packers receivers. They were even more shorthanded this week. Ty Montgomery out with some sort of kidney-related illness. I would hope that there would be more details forthcoming as the week goes on. Don't know if it's a long-term thing. Sounds like it's not, but they were also without Randall Cobb. And, you know, they went out there and they beat a Falcons defense that, from what I could tell, it looked like they had played a lot of their, you know, their cover three stuff, a lot of their zone stuff. Jordy Nelson, I mean, God, it seemed like it was forever since we saw Jordy Nelson make a big play, but he had a long catch in the first quarter that set up an early score. And, you know, Rodgers picked apart the zone a couple times. Rodgers was incredible in this game. Not to have the Falcons take a backseat right now, but I think this was another encouraging step forward by the Packers, though I'm not completely sold because, I don't know, I wasn't crazy about that Bears win. I think that Bears defense was a little bit of a practice squad preseason defense that they beat on Thursday night 2 weeks ago. But, I don't know, do you see this offense trending up at this point, Andy?
Well, my rule, I'm sticking with my rule, is I'm not going to evaluate the Packers until I see their coaches film, because it's so dependent on what their wide receivers do. And Rodgers can make some incredible plays, and I think he's become a week-to-week proposition with extreme results on the positive end. So he can be great some weeks, but the offense can still be functioning poorly. And it's a long season and a big picture thing. They really don't have a running back, though, right now in Green Bay. I think Nile Davis will solve that. I think he was a very good player a few years ago in Kansas City. I'm curious to see what he is now. But there's a little bit of a treading water scenario going on just because that's the personnel. The guys are hurt. They don't have running backs at this point. Yeah. And the guy that they were playing, the guy, both guys plural, that they were filling in at running back, Cobb and Montgomery, were not available in this one. So that's a tough hand to be dealt. Atlanta's a good team, though, Gary, and we've talked about them the last few weeks. Yeah, when they've the games that they've lost recently, I think they've looked extremely good. And as a long-term prognosis, I am as confident in them as almost any team in the NFC for two reasons. One is their offense is very hard to play against because they do so much out of base personnel, two running backs on the field, or two tight ends, or in their case, sometimes three tight ends, which more and more teams are doing this year. And they're so creative and diverse out of base. And when you play base, the defense has to play base, especially against a team that has a Devontae Freeman, a really good running back, a really good ground game. You have to keep your linebackers on the field, and that's where the mismatches get made. But also, those base defenses aren't used to seeing some of the passing concepts that Atlanta does out of this. They're just so diverse. And then the other thing is Atlanta's pass rush, at least on film the last few weeks heading into this game, and Green Bay's a tough offensive line to go against, so maybe things have changed. We'd have to see the all-22 within the flow of the game, but it's a better pass rush than it was early in the year as well. And if that pass rush in Atlanta gets going and becomes controlling in game, and I see they had three sacks in this one, then it's a whole different defensive story there in Atlanta.
No, it was good. That pass rush keeps getting better. And look, this was another game where Julio Jones, three catches, and you know they threw it around. 28 receptions overall for this team. Mohamed Sanu had 9, including the game winner, which, well, I mean, it was a direct result of two defensive backs following Julio Jones in the end zone, and Sanu gets behind a linebacker in zone coverage, and that's an easy touchdown, and that's just a well-designed offense. That's just, you know, Kyle Shanahan's pushing all the right buttons right now. Even the second year back, Teron Ward fills in for Tevin Coleman today and looks great. He basically looks like a miniaturized Coleman out there and making plays out of the backfield as a runner and receiver.
Right now, it's the best designed offense in the league, I think. It's certainly the best base personnel offense in the NFL. And the only one that could rival it, because technically it's base personnel there in New England with those two tight ends, that is New England, but they're different styles of teams. It's a really well put together offense.
No, this was good. And it was good to see them get a win because, look, if they had dropped to 4-4, which they very well could have this game, it would have been a very unfair 4-4. So it's good to see them get out to 5-3. They are in control of the NFC South right now. And do you want to know what Matt Ryan thought of this game, Andy?
What did he think?
You can find out Tuesday when he is the guest on the MMQB podcast with Albert
Breer.
Very
good.
You can catch Matt Ryan on the MMQB podcast with Albert Breer. That comes out on Tuesday mornings. Very good show. You should be listening to it.
Number three.
But as for this show, let's go on to topic three. And this was one of those, you know, I mentioned at the top, it was excitement today. It was close games, and everyone enjoys close football games, but maybe not beautiful games. And this was sort of the epitome of that. This was the Raiders overcome an NFL record 23 penalties to beat the Bucs in Tampa on a walk-off. Like, can we call it walk-off? World Series is going on. I'm just stealing baseball terms at this point. But
well, this
was
an overtime win. So yeah, it'd have to be. Walk-off, absolutely, walk-off touchdown. And it's worth six times what a regular walk-off World Series home run tends to be worth.
There you go. And that's
6 points to one. That's how that works.
And that's the excitement of it. But this game was, it was the kind of game where you can have 24 penalties and still win. We had missed extra points. We had Janikowski missed two potential game winners from 50-plus yards. The first one, he missed a 52-yarder in overtime that would have given them the three-point advantage, but the Bucs would have gotten the ball back, if I remember correctly, which I think I do. But, yeah, this was a game where Derek Carr threw for 513 yards, and there's some MVP buzz coming up with Derek Carr. I think he is.
Who's doing that? Who's saying MVP buzz?
He is erratic. They are, Andy. Them. No, I don't want to point out any colleagues or people in the SI family who might have written that, but somebody did. And he is not the only one. I've seen numerous people thrown that around today after Carr put up 513 and four touchdowns. He's interesting. He always makes it interesting. It's always it's erratic, but it's working.
500 yards, 513 to be exact, four touchdowns. That's a phenomenal game, no matter how it looks.
Yep.
40 out of 59. So I'm going to grant you that. Derek Carr this season has been maybe the 20th best quarterback in the league. He has been extremely up and down. And every week you put on the film, and he doesn't seem to be reading the field clearly. He stays on bad reads too long. He gets off a good read too early. And until the past few weeks, his accuracy had been a little bit hit or miss. I say all this because I think Derek Carr is a guy, I've said before, that deserves to be viewed with a critical eye because the bar and the expectation ought to be high with him. He's smart. He's mm-hmm. athletic. He throws well. He can be a high-level quarterback. But and I'm not going to go so far to say that they've been winning despite Derek Carr, but without question, and it's irrefutable when you watch the film, the Raiders had gotten to 5-2 and their quarterback had not been playing very well. And the discussion then is that a good thing or a bad thing? And at some point, Carr's going to have to play well. I don't think you can go the distance with an inconsistent quarterback, especially in an offense that puts so much onus on the QB to run such a wide-reaching, different varieties of system. And to have a game like this today is very big news. That's quite impressive, and Oakland badly needed that. This is not MVP stuff, though. He's MVP of week – what week are we? Week 8? So he's MVP of week 8. But the Raiders
we'll find out when we hand out the weekly awards in a couple of minutes, Andy.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, we do that at the end. Well, the Raiders have been – and this is really a symptom. Like you said, 23 penalties. This is a team that has not looked great all season long in their winning games, and something's going to give here.
Yeah.
Either they're going to get really good, and they're going to be the best team in the AFC because they'll keep winning when they play well, or some of the sloppiness catches up to them, and a lot of it's going to come down to Derek Carr and how well he plays, and it's nice to see that he had a great game today.
Yeah. Now, I actually just lost my stat, but they actually have a really good record on the East Coast under Jack Del Rio now.
Well,
in 1 o'clock starts,
I think they're 4-0 this season. On the East Coast,
yeah.
On early games. That's what no one's saying. It's these. They're playing at 10 o'clock body clock time, And we've been told over the years that's one of the hardest things to do. And the Raiders have done it week in and week out so far. Now, they also haven't been very good at home, and they're going to have a lot more home games coming up. So, and they have a Sunday night home game next week. When have they ever played on NBC? Because NBC took those games over in 2007. And the Raiders really haven't been a primetime type of team since those years. I don't know if they've played on NBC before.
That's a really good question.
We'll get it by the end of the show.
We'll find it out next week, and when we talk about the game next week, we'll have to mention it. But, yeah, that's – I mean, even a rivalry game, you know, Broncos, Chiefs, I feel like that would have been a Sunday nighter. I feel like you always get that sort of – you know, that they'll – sort of throw the bone towards some of those classic rivalries, even if the games aren't great.
Okay, you know what, Gary? I've looked it up. They actually have played on Sunday night. It was in Invesco Field at Mile High. So it was the Broncos again. It was October 15th, and it was back in 2006. So that was actually the first year. I said 07. It was 06 that NBC had them. So it's been 10 years now. This is going on 11, and we're in 11 years ago. They last played on prime time, on Sunday night prime time.
There you go. And while you were looking that up, I looked up the stat that I just pulled out of the top of my head. 8-3, 1 o'clock starts under Jack Del Rio now. That's good stuff. 5-0 on the road this year.
Yep.
5-0 on the road this year. So, yeah, not to, you know, they're still figuring things out. They're still sort of feeling their way through, but the Raiders are 6-2. They are in that tie with the Broncos atop the AFC West.
Number four.
Let's move on to topic number four. That is the Panthers get back on the board. This was it was an absolutely needed game. They had Arizona sort of limping in off of that Sunday night slugfest last week, and the Cardinals looked like they, their body clock was, I don't know, seemed like it was a 4 a.m. sort of wake up for them where they sort of stumbled out of bed and showed up at the stadium and were down 14-0 before they knew it. But this was a much better performance by the Panthers defense, most notably up front. Kawan Short and star Lotulelei were much better in this one, and that's, you know, it's a start. And we'll see if they can build it going forward. The secondary wasn't tested a whole lot. The Cardinals are really just a mess in this game, and I don't know if there's anything else you can really say besides they didn't show up, and it's somewhat understandable having to travel across the country after what happened last Sunday night, but they just weren't really in this one. And they sort of pulled
it close. It's not
going
to be understandable to them, though. Bruce Arians is not going to understand that. He's going to say you're a professional football team. It's a team you played not long ago. And Arizona, they put a lot of burden on their offensive line there in the nature of that system. They do a lot of empty formations and a lot of deep intermediate passes. So they expect their offensive line and their quarterback to be able to handle that. And to go out and give up 8 sacks – and that's the name, but that tells the whole story. That's the end of the discussion right there. And Carolina, if their front four is going, then they're the Panthers that we've come to know, and their front four had not been going until this week, and we're seeing results now. The other thing is Carolina got some pressure with cornerback blitzes in this game. Leonard Johnson had a sack. Darrell Worley had a sack. The other thing Carolina does well, besides rush the passer with 4 guys and play zone coverage behind it, is when they do blitz, they dial up very selective blitzes and they use third-level guys, meaning their defensive backs, safeties, corners. And that's important because a lot of times protections, pass protections, do not account for those guys. And they're faster blitzers than linebackers because they're just generally faster athletes. So when the Panthers are really rolling, their defensive line's getting pressure and they're dialing up a few blitzes here and there. And in this case, in this game, they got home. Bruce Arians will not be happy at this one because to get beat on 8 sacks means you got out-executed and probably out-schemed a few times.
Yeah, that is pretty much exactly what happened. I mean, the offensive line got pushed around last week by Seattle's, which is, you know, Seahawks are playing a whole lot better than the Panthers have been this year. They only even tried 10 runs today because they fell behind so quickly. But yeah, this was not a good performance for the Cardinals. They probably had some sort of, I don't know, PTSD going back into Bank of America Stadium. Do they still call it Bank of America Stadium in Charlotte?
Yeah, they do, I believe, yes.
Okay. I don't know. I can't keep all the corporations straight anymore. But yeah, this was one to, I don't know, kind of forget about if you're Arizona. I'm not excusing it. I'm just saying I understand why they had a tough time pulling it together for this one. And the Panthers, you know, they got an extra week of preparation and go into it. But we're going to talk a little bit of Carson Palmer when we get to the mailbag later in the show. But for now,
number five.
Off to London for the final. This is the final London game of the season. It was not the final international series game. We still have Texans and Raiders, I believe, play down in Mexico City. Is that right? Am I right? Am I just making that up? I know it's the Texans.
Yes, the Raiders, and it's another primetime game for the Raiders, by the way. It's a Monday night game this time. Yeah, Monday night game.
Can't get enough of them on primetime. Yeah, that'll be a Monday nighter.
That one will have playoff implications too, by the way, because Houston's going to be in the race, whether their record's good or not. They'll be in the race in that division, and Oakland, we assume they'll stay relatively close to the path they're on now.
In the AFC,
that's
South.
November 21st.
The AFC South increasingly feels like one of those small school NCAA tournament basketball teams, where it's like, you know, winner's going to get to the tournament, and they'll just be happy to be there.
Oh,
that'll be the accomplishment.
I think we're a little too mean. You're too mean on the South. I treat them like a division that's not great. You treat them like they're a sub package or subhuman division.
Subhuman.
I don't know. You know
what I mean. Bit of an exaggeration, but I do think it's really bad football being played by those teams for the most part. They had their moments. We'll talk about some Texans later in the show, but right now let's talk about the epidemic of ties continued. This was Bengals and Redskins in London. Ends up 27-27. Dustin Hopkins misses the chip shot. 34-yarder, if we can call that a chip shot. I'll call it a chip shot. 34-yarder in overtime, and ends up being a tie. Andy, you had a good eye on this game. What were your takeaways?
I called Peter King a few hours after the game because I have to coordinate with him what I'm going to write because I'm kind of his undercard on MMQB and on Monday mornings. Mm-hmm. And so we make sure we don't overlap. And I said, I watched this Washington-Cincy game. It was tremendous. And I have no idea what I would say about it. It's a couple of teams that are basically 500 that tied, that played their style of football and bounced off each other really well. But there's no thesis from this game. Both teams played their style of football. And so my backup plan was to write something on the Browns, believe it or not. I'm happy with that, how that went. Peter, by the way, spoiled the Browns game by accident for me. He mentioned they were 0-8. He said, I'm not going to ruin it. I know how you'd like to not have it spoiled. He goes, but let's just say, you know, so you have an 0-8 team and blah, blah, and he just went on as if nothing had happened. And I couldn't get mad at him the way I got mad at you because, you know, he outranks you and me by a couple of laps, especially me. So anyway, as far as what happened in this game, Washington does what they do. They win with passes to their running backs, their slot receiver, and their tight end, because those are the guys you create mismatches with via the formation. Cincinnati won with A.J. Green. He made plays. Josh Norman could not cover him. It was a classic game by both sides, and I guess now we know that these teams are relatively even.
Yeah. I thought Josh Norman had some moments.
No, he did not. He had some moments where the ball was poorly thrown, and so it looked like his coverage was a lot better than it was. If it were perfect balls being thrown, Dalton was not his sharpest at times this game.
Yeah.
If it were perfect balls, A.J. Green would have had 300 yards on him because Green beat him deep a number of times.
I'm not I thought the final box score and the reaction and the highlight, I thought it was a little bit rough on Norman. I thought he got his hands on a couple of passes.
But they were poorly thrown. They just weren't great passes. So he got his hand. It was more about Dalton than Norman.
Well, I'll say this about Josh Norman. He's got to stop touching people's faces.
No kidding. Five. That, is that the record for penalties? In a game, illegal contact, hands to the face. What's the record for that?
Yeah, I mean, I made the mistake of making it our pre-show poll question about, you know, who had the most legitimate gripe, and we'll get to it during the reaction section. But I don't know what Norman's gripe was, because I actually went back and watched all of those penalties again just to make sure I wasn't, you know, too groggy in the morning. My body clock, you know, being on the 9 a.m. Eastern time. You know,
yeah, you know, you're not coached by Jack Del Rio. We get that. Exactly. You can't just get up and watch a game at any hour.
Maybe I just wasn't ready to watch football, but no, they were all blatant penalties. He was trying to say Green was knocking Norman's hand into Green's face mask, and it's like that's like a you're hitting yourself type of vibe.
Yeah,
I don't know. I love Josh Norman, and I think he's good for the league, but I don't know what he was talking about with that rant.
Here I'm going to say three things. Right? No, he was frustrated, and that's fine. Here are three things that I think have been very true watching every snap of Josh Norman's on film, or in this case, I saw it on TV today. One is he is extremely aggressive in his press positioning. He gets up there and he goes nose to nose on you. Mm-hmm. And so in this case, his hands got involved in that. Two, he's not a fast corner. He's a smart corner, and he can change directions, and he understands angles extremely well, but he's not fast. And so guys like Beckham give him trouble. Guys like A.J. Green give him trouble. These sinewy, smooth, long-striding, fast guys. And then number three is, because of all these, when you're not a fast corner, I think he's a very, very good corner, and I mean that in a way to say he's not a great corner. I think he's an 8 out of 10 type of guy.
Still good.
Well, I would think he would want to be. I think he probably thinks, and as a corner should, he probably thinks he's a 9.5 to a 10 out of 10. He's not. Yeah. Josh Norman's not on. Desmond Trufant, for example, has been an infinitely more valuable corner in Atlanta than Norman has in Washington this year. And there's been a few guys like that. Norman's top 10, not top 5.
Yeah. No, I think that's realistic. And I think everyone's coming to that realization, whether Josh Norman has as well. I don't know if that's the case, but
and it doesn't matter. It's kind of the reality. You hope he hasn't, right? Washington has to hope he hasn't, because he ultimately follows number one receivers around in that scheme, and so he has to think he's a number one guy, and he is. He plays his scheme well, but the reality is, Gary, Beckham destroyed him in week 2, and now AJ Green's destroyed him here in week 8. He's just not as talented as some of these wide receivers are.
That was destroyed-ish.
I don't know why we're quibbling about this.
I gave Josh Norman an F+ on this game. It was my grade for him.
Okay, well that's all right. I would have probably got like a C-, probably D+, but all right. All along, you were arguing my point. I didn't even know it.
Number 6.
The Patriots go to 4-0 during the Brady section of the schedule. This was a pretty dominant win in Buffalo in the rain and the cold and the wind up there. I don't know. I mean, this team is looking like they have sort of separated themselves from the rest of football. Bills were a little bit shorthanded. No Shady McCoy today, but you know, it seemed like they were trailing by 2 touchdowns pretty much throughout. They got an early field goal and the Patriots just came back and put 14 on the board, and that was pretty much all it was.
Brady had a 15-yard scramble in this game on a 3rd and 5. Have you noticed?
Yeah.
And this has not become a part of his game. It's purely a coincidence. He's been scrambling more this year. He's been very effective on a handful of scrambles this season.
Yeah. I think he
That's
was
it.
Emboldened
I mean, it's just a
by
fun
that.
Fact. It's a fun
I
fact.
I think he was emboldened by that. What he had like a 30-yard reception in that game. They lost to the Eagles on that trick play last December,
yeah.
Yeah, so I think he wants the ball in his hands from now on. I think he wants to outshine some of these young athletic guys, maybe.
It's been a very typical season for Brady so far, by his standards, of course. He's been excellent. I see Lorenzo Alexander hurt his hamstring in this game, too, and I want to say, just on the topic, since we're talking Bills, initially, in the beginning of the season, I felt Alexander, his production was coming because he's part of a really good blitz design scheme, and he's the beneficiary of some of those winning through scheme. And I think that was true. I think there was some of that. But watching him on film the last few weeks, he's as good as his number. He's been playing as well as his numbers suggest he is. And I don't think I've ever seen anything like that, where a guy in his mid-30s who's been an average at best athlete and really a special team and a fill-in plug guy in defense, all of a sudden becomes dynamic. But if he's out of the lineup for any extent of time for Buffalo, that defense, that's going to hurt that defense. He's become their best all-around front seven player, and I can't begin to tell you how that happened. He's 33 or 34 years old,
yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah, something clicked in him this year. He's a fun guy. Did a good Q&A with Kalen Kaler on our site a couple of weeks ago. But, yeah, Bills fall to 4-4, kind of crashing back down to earth. They no longer control their own destiny. I think that's the headliner from this one.
Yep. No, I agree with you. Whatever moves the topic past Buffalo, because I know what happens when you talk Buffalo, you've decided that you're a big fan of the city and fan of the area, and they lost today. They lost for a little while their best front seven player potentially. I hope not.
Well, they also, you know, Shaq Lawson is back, so we'll see if they can get something out of the rookie going forward. But they got a little bit of work.
He's playing defensive end and nickel for him right now. That looks like that'll be his role, which is what they drafted him to play. But they're going to need him to produce quicker than they thought. They did get Marcell Dareus back, too, so maybe he becomes more of a factor. You add Dareus and Lawson to that front seven, in theory, on paper, it's a better defense now than it was a month ago.
Yeah.
Alexander, though, again, they're going to need Alexander in that lineup.
Dareus was on the bike, too, for a while. In that game. No, nothing good went on in that game for the Buffalo Bills. Now, I'm sure something good did happen, but right now, looking at it, nothing good happened.
Number 7.
Rematch between the Chargers and Broncos. This time the Broncos get the better of San Diego, come away with a win, move to 6-2. Kind of weird seeing these teams play their games against each other close to each other. And this was, the Chargers kind of did sort of the Chargers early season thing. Josh Lambeau missed a field goal, a 46-yarder, also missed an extra point. If it had not been for that, this might have been really interesting, because really the Broncos didn't move the ball. They did a little bit, but they didn't dominate this game. It was an 8-point spread. If the Chargers, they had to go for a touchdown late in the game instead of kicking the field goal, and that's why the spread stayed at 8. They missed a 2-point conversion as well. This was one that they kind of, they could have stolen this one out in Mile High if a couple things had broken their way. They gave up a pick six on a deflected pass. It was...
Well, yeah, I'm seeing the... numbers sometimes can tell the story, and Phillip Rivers was 20 out of 47. 20 out of 47 for Phillip Rivers, which means that defense must have been swarming, because Rivers doesn't roll out of bed and have that kind of a bad day throwing the ball. He didn't just lose his touch all of a sudden to that degree. 3 interceptions, 4 sacks. He was hit a whole bunch. What San Diego did to Denver last time, and why I would need to look at this one closer to understand, is they operated out of base personnel. Same thing Atlanta did when they beat Denver. That's kind of the formula for beating Denver, is you want to keep Denver's dime defense off the field, because that's where their pass rush comes alive, their man coverages. They're just a better team in dime. They're more athletic than they are when they play their base 4-3 personnel. Also, when they're in their base, Von Miller's a strong side linebacker, not a defensive end. So you essentially remove the best pass rusher from the equation. Melvin Gordon had 23 runs for 111 yards. Kenneth Farrell had 3 for 12. So I'm guessing that's 26 carries right there. I'm guessing they spent quite a bit of time in base. Derek Watt had a catch for 53 yards. I just want to see the formations, though, because what happened, Denver figured something out, right? If San Diego's playing base and Denver's still getting to Phillip Rivers, and somebody changed something in the equation somewhere. And sometimes you need not to kick the can down to the coach's film, but sometimes you need those coaches' film angles from the end zone to see what they did differently.
Well, you figure this. I mean, Hunter Henry had a big day. Last time, he was isolated on linebackers a lot. They didn't seem to get that a whole lot. The other thing was, and not to, everyone plays hurt, but Chargers were pretty banged up. Travis Benjamin was questionable coming to this one. Tyrell Williams looked, I was surprised he came back into the game, and apparently, he's going to be, you know, probably week to week going forward. Henry was banged up. Antonio Gates. Rivers and Gates have had some miscommunications since,
they have.
Since Gates came back. It's been really, really weird to watch. I mean, Griff Whalen ended up out there. One of the picks was a, I don't want to call it a Griff Whalen special. It could have been Philip Rivers' fault. It was a miscommunication, but I'm going to guess it was Griff Whalen's fault.
Probably the new guy. We don't know that.
Been in that offense for a while.
Yeah, yeah. You're right about Gates, too. And that's strange. I still think he's their number one tight end. I think Henry's fast closing in on him.
Yeah.
They've gone to Gates, especially between the field numbers where he runs those zone sit-down routes. They still do that a lot, but you're right. Gates and Rivers have not been on the same page this season like they were before, and that's been interesting to see.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm sorry to shortchange the Broncos in this one. Trevor Siemian made a couple of nice throws, and you know, they took advantage of the opportunities they got. Melvin Gordon, though, and I've been a critic of Melvin Gordon's. I thought it was a kind of ridiculous pick when they traded up to get him and in the 2014 draft. And, you know, certainly his heavy, heavy fumbles. Or I'm sorry, that was the 2015 draft. You know, all the fumbles, all the giveaways, and I think he was sort of taking advantage of some slightly lighter boxes early in his career and not even really taking advantage of it. But Melvin Gordon has been excellent the last couple of weeks, and he was great today. He had 111 yards, and he earned pretty much every one of those yards. He is looking like a star back. He's looking like a back you draft in the first round.
He's a guy, if he has the right cast around, I think he needs blocking. And if his blocking's good, and a lot of guys are like that, but if his blocking's good, I think he can be what you expect him to be if you're San Diego. But he needs the blocking. And that's interesting because in their scheme, the run blocking is not necessarily an inherent feature. They used to do a lot out of shotgun, so it would be create your own space, run against lighter boxes. That's not Gordon's game, and they've adjusted to him a little bit the last few weeks.
Number 8.
All right, well, Andy, let's move on to topic 8. This is reader response topic. We're going to take some mailbag questions here. As always, you can get Andy or I on Twitter or on Facebook, ggramling_si, Andy_Benoit. You'll just have to spell our full names to find us on Facebook. We're very available there, though. Let's start with Jocelyn from Sonoma, friend of the show, at Jocelyn Saved, writes in, what happened to Carson Palmer? Did age just hit him? Rumors that he would retire if they won Super Bowl 50. Is he just not mentally there anymore? Andy, I'll let you handle that one. What are you seeing from Carson Palmer this year?
I have no idea mentally or not. I can't get in a guy's head. I think that he has not been as sharp overall as a player, a thrower of the football. Decision-making at the intermediate levels, those deep intermediate levels, he hasn't quite been the confident passer that he was a year ago. And why that is, we don't know. His receivers haven't been as consistent at times, so maybe he's not as trusting in the offense. I can't answer that, but he's not what he was last season. I'm not ready to write him off yet either, though.
Okay. All right. Let's go Wesley Metcalf at WR Metcalf. Honest opinion of playing games in London, would you support moving a team to England? I would support it. I think it is inevitable. I think the NFL has not found a reason not to do it at this point, and the reason to do it is to open up more revenue streams, and we all know that is something they are a little bit interested in doing. I think they have some logistical things they still have to figure out. I personally think they need to add more bye weeks to the schedule, make the regular season longer, not necessarily add more games per team, but you got to figure it out. I think a big problem with Thursday night and with the London games has been the travel and the body clock stuff. And it's just the games played at too high a level to, I don't know, screw with guys' schedules. I guess that would be the most general way of putting it.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think if they can, I wouldn't mind them going to 17 games, no more than that certainly, and only if they add a bye week. So take away two preseason weeks, make it 17 games, you lose one game, but if that game is in London, let's say that 17th game, each team plays a game in London, maybe that becomes your Thursday game even, then you can start structuring the bye weeks in a way that makes those Thursday games palatable, 10 days off instead of 3 days off in between games. And I think London, as you said, Gary, it's inevitable for that. I'm not a huge fan of it. There's a little bit of patriot nationalism is probably the harsher word that I deserve to be using there on myself. But I'm also smart enough to realize that guys like you and me get paid because people like football, Gary, and if London comes in, that's good for us. That's good for our sport. So I will come to embrace it over time. And I have. I've been watching these London games. London fans, by the way, to their credit, every time I get, and I talked to Jenny Vrentress about this once, every time we get emails from fans in Europe, they are always so much more well thought out and insightful and curious than the emails that we get here. Those fans over there really, really are interested. The ones who are interested are really interested in the game. They look at it from an academic standpoint.
There's a thirst for knowledge. I'll say that.
Yeah.
I enjoy interacting with everyone, but I tend to find when, you know, the people who write in and think they already know everything about football, and I don't claim to know everything about football, but I do think I know more than most people who contact me on Twitter. Most, not all, but you know, the people who really dig in and say I know more than you, they tend to not be from.
They're not, yeah, they're not
places.
Europeans doing that. Not yet, yeah. Anyways. Maybe give them some more gains. Maybe they'll
exactly.
come around.
Exactly. Andy, we have a couple of, reader polls, audience polls. We have listener polls to run through. We had last week's post-show poll. We had talked a little bit, Jared Goff, Case Keenum, what do the Rams do next? So we posed that question to you all out there. Everyone voted. 49% want Jared Goff in there. 12% want Case Keenum. 6% wanted Sean Mannion. And 33% wanted full-time Wildcat with Todd Gurley taking the snaps.
Which means 33% didn't take it seriously. And 100% don't begin to have a fraction of the information that the Rams have. So I, with all due respect to our polls, I don't see the point of that one.
And again, it's legally binding, so the Rams will be starting Jared Goff in Week 9. I believe is what we just found out. Goff might, you know, the report was that Goff is, that they're ramping up the preparation for Goff.
Sure.
Whether
sure.
he'll start and week 9 or not, we'll find out. But
yeah,
I'm totally fine if he sits the entire season. I think there's no problem with that. I think the history of redshirted quarterbacks is a very positive one. So I think there's no reason for them to rush him. The pre-show podcast for this week was who had the most legitimate gripe with today's officiating. Cam Newton with the low hit got 51%. Seattle with the Willie Snead sending some really nice picks down in New Orleans. The Pelicans should sign him because he was blocking out everyone. He just game was ridiculous. It was a good game, but the officiating was absurd. Seattle gets 35%. And then Josh Norman pulled in 14% on his complaints that A.J. Green was grabbing his hands and hitting himself
in the face
with
quit
Josh
hitting
Norman's
yourself,
hands.
Quit hitting yourself like they do when you're 5 and your 6-year-old
yep.
cousin.
Although I guess it's reversed because you are literally hitting yourself with someone else's hands.
I would go accusation. With Newton on that one. I'm with Newton. He's got to start getting some flags.
I go with Newton because it was career threatening. I think that's a bigger deal. I do think I don't want to say it cost the Seahawks the game today because who knows what's going to happen, with the flow of things, the butterfly effect, if those calls are made properly, but it was ridiculous. There was also a forward progress thing that Pete Carroll was more upset about, and rightfully so. It was just absurd. They had Tim Hightower on the sideline and you know, they ruled in the most technical sense that his forward progress had been stopped before he got pushed out of bounds and wound the clock. Absurd stuff. But that's kind of what is happening with the officials these
they
days.
Do a good officials do a good job, too. Let's keep that
they
in
do,
mind. What,
they do a good job. And I try not to get upset. The most ridiculous pass interference stuff will upset me. I don't get upset with the holding, non-holding. I think that's really difficult. The stuff that happens.
Also, I think they do a good job on holding. Watching film, I think they get holding right 99% of the time.
Okay. it's a lot of these are, and when I say judgment calls, I mean it's you know the like the taunting flags. That's a judgment. That's not a reaction call. That's actually, you know, someone has to think for a second and say, do I want to throw a flag here or
well,
the forward
yeah,
progress
certain,
thing today?
There are some gestures that aren't allowed. That's cut and dried. There are some words that aren't allowed. They can hear that. That's cut and dried. It's the taunt. I don't have a problem with the taunting fouls either. Don't taunt. No. Be a gentleman out there.
But there's taunting on every play.
Well, okay. There's gamesmanship and trash talk on every play. There's not taunting on every play.
Nah.
All right. Well, do we have another
like
question,
that.
Or are we doing lightning round yet?
No. We do have a contest winner, though. We had a contest. We're giving away – these are really nice T-shirts that Homage makes for the MMQB. If you saw the MMQB issue of Sports Illustrated, Khalil Mack is ripping his jersey off, revealing his MMQB T-shirt. That's a $30 T-shirt he's wearing under there. Khalil Mack probably loves that T-shirt. One of the most expensive things he owns, I'm sure, after signing that monster contract. But these are really nice T-shirts. We're giving some away. What you have to do is you have to go on iTunes, leave a review, and when you leave your review, leave your prediction for what you think the number one topic on the show is going to be. We had our inaugural contest this week. Oh, and also you have to leave some sort of contact info, whether it's your Twitter handle, your Facebook URL. I guess you could put your email or your phone number if you were really daring, but that's probably not a good idea at all. Twitter handle is probably the best way to go. No one got the number one topic, but we're going to give away a T-shirt anyway because we said we'd do it. This goes to Vishal620. He got the number two topic, which was the shootout between the Packers and the Falcons. So we will, I will contact you, Vishal, on Twitter, and we will send you a really nice T-shirt. They're
or maybe
really,
send him
really
a lesser
t-shirts.
One since he got number two. Give him a lesser T-shirt. we can save we'll the real you... ones for someone that gets it right next week.
I will dig through my my drawer and pull out like an old pit-stained white Hanes T-shirt. Send it to you. That's what you get for getting the number two topic. Go. But no, he gets a nice T-shirt from Homage. If you want to see the T-shirts, they're on Homage. Just search MMQB. But if you want to win one, you have to put your prediction in a review on iTunes, and you have to make the review 5 stars, or I'm just going to be angry at you, and I'm not even going to acknowledge it. Because how can we not be a 5-star show?
Number 9.
All right, Andy. The lightning round. And we'll start with the game you had your eye on, and you're writing on for the Extra Point column this week. The Browns. Really this bad? They're 0-8 now. This is probably their most winnable game left on the schedule.
The column to give it away, because, you know... That's,
yeah, you can give it away.
It's a Browns column. I understand what's going to happen here. No, they're not that bad. Do they deserve to be 0-8? Absolutely. They've lost 8 games, and I think you are what your record says you are, and I can tell you why they lost each of those 8 games. But they still look like a professional football team, and I think people want them to be a bit of a joke. Oh, the Browns... they're not a joke. You put on the film, they're still competitive. You still have to play your best game. If a team, Dallas has them next week, Baltimore the week after that, if either of those teams don't show up, they'll lose to the Browns.
All right. Well, good. They lost today, though. The Jets came back. Fitz sort of rose from the dead a little bit. Brandon Marshall had a couple of nice blocks
Fitz.
On that long Bilal Powell. And
yep, believe in Fitz. Don't stop believing in him.
There you go. Just when you think we're done with him, he comes back. Brock Osweiler sort of back on track. The Texans beat the Lions in Houston, and that's an AFC South win, so chalk that up for the AFC South. This was, I don't know, if you have your first-round wide receivers in DeAndre Hopkins and Will Fuller and you want to utilize them, it wasn't so much today. It was a lot of C.J. Fedorowicz and Ryan Griffin and a little bit of Steven Anderson mixed in there, and you know, they jumped out and then they held on, but a win is a win, and I don't know what you do with Brock Osweiler going forward, but you got
him. Hey, look, that's a win against a team that had won a lot of games itself coming in. Detroit was hot. Detroit's now 4-4. Houston's 5-3, and their quarterback hasn't played great yet, and their defense has been without its best player and will continue to be. So that's feather in the cap for Houston. They're 5-0 at home too.
Yeah. No, it's a good win. You'd like to think that the passing game would be a little more explosive against a secondary that was missing Darius Slay and was, you know, had not even been that good with Darius Slay in the lineup. But that's how it goes. Win for the Texans, and we will end that on a positive. The Seahawks, coming off that slugfest last Sunday night, go to New Orleans and lose. The Saints win a it was an interesting shootout. Like I said, that Ed Hockley crew kind of made this spoiled it a little bit. But this was a good game. Seahawks jumped out. The Saints really controlled the clock. And I will add one more bonus mail question in here. At Jason Beatty asked, why do you think there is such a discrepancy of penalties called between the Seahawks and their opponents? It's not a significant discrepancy. The Seahawks are up there. I looked it up. They had 55 penalties on the year. 15 of those are pre-snap, which means 40 are mid-play. And I think when you have a team, I mean, look, the secondary is physical. They work it right up to that point. They walk right up to the line, and sometimes they get caught, and sometimes they because of the reputation, some of the ticky-tack stuff gets called on them. But, like you saw in Atlanta, sometimes they get away with stuff too. And then you have a bad offensive line and a mobile quarterback, and that can add up to some holding problems.
That's there are some people who think the Seahawks' attitude, and some people in the league believe that the Seahawks have figured this out and the Ravens figured out a few years ago that, yeah, we might get a lot of penalties, but the owners don't want these penalties to happen on every play, and it's just human condition that referees are going to stop throwing the flags eventually. So we're just going to keep doing the penalties and wait for them to stop calling it. I'm not saying that's true or not. I'm saying I've heard legitimate people, NFL coaches, at least discuss whether that's the possibility or not.
That was the Pat Riley New York Knicks and Miami Heat of the 90s. That's how they played defense. Tenacious
and
D,
they're probably
as
right.
It were.
They're not going to call it every single time, and so they'll live with it. The tough part about defensive penalties, though, is this is why they have this, is to prevent teams from doing exactly what we're espousing here. But that the automatic first down makes it tough to justify getting a defensive penalty. You don't want those.
Yeah. Yeah. And the Chiefs beat the Colts, and I should have mentioned in the above pre-show poll, lots of write-in votes for Alex Smith, who took two pretty nasty shots. I don't know if you saw either of them, Andy.
I didn't, but I heard one of them was a cut to the ear, and I just saw that in like the bottom line, and my initial thinking was, oh, that doesn't sound too serious. And then I thought about it more, and I thought, you know, there aren't a lot of ways to severely cut your ear that don't probably jeopardize the entire ear. Like, is Alex, like, what, this maybe maybe it's exactly serious.
I don't know exactly how his ear would have been cut on this play. I mean, his helmet stayed on.
That's just what the bottom line said.
Yeah, it was two very late slides around the line of scrimmage. And both times the defender came in. It was Clinton Gathers on the second one. It was Edwin Jackson on the first one. And both times it was really bad contact. I don't know exactly how you legislate plays like that out of it, because they were very late slides both times. And look, Alex Smith is a mobile guy. The opponents know that. They're moving up to tackle him. And if he's essentially sliding, you know, at guys' feet, you know, by the time they've already closed in, I don't think these were dirty plays. We could talk about whether you want to throw flags on any sort of contact to the head like this, and they probably should. That is probably how you legislate it out. But I wouldn't call these, you know, ridiculously dirty plays, and you know, these are a couple of Vontaze Burfict type of guys. But yeah, it was nasty. Nick Foles stepped in for a little bit and played well. And the Chiefs, you know, they just kept on keeping on and got a nice win here in Indianapolis. That's all I got, Andy. That's all I got for the lightning round. You want to add anything?
No, I want to do these awards.
All right, then let's hit topic 10.
Number 10.
The awards. Do you want to go offensive player of the week first, or should I go?
Yeah, I'll go offensive, and I'll give it to AJ Green. And we talked about him earlier in the show. Mm-hmm. We don't need to say it anymore. He's the NFL's leading receiver. He's acrobatic. He's fast. He's been phenomenal.
I'm actually going to give it to Aaron Rodgers in a losing effort. I thought he was magnificent playing with a supporting cast that. I mean, there was Geronimo Allison caught a touchdown today, who I didn't know was in the NFL. I remember him at Illinois, but I didn't know he played in the NFL now. Again, no running backs, no Randall Cobb, no Ty Montgomery today, and he was their leading rusher, 6 for 60. He was throwing it around. I thought it was a very nice effort from Aaron Rodgers, and certainly he did everything that you know, he could have done to win it. Defensive player of the week, who you got, Andy?
Yeah, I'm going Sean Lee for the Cowboys. Was in on a number of plays, run and pass. When Dallas goes man-to-man coverage, Sean Lee a lot of times plays the middle of the field. He doesn't necessarily match up to someone. He's kind of the free defender there. And when he's in that position, he is extremely dangerous. He owns that middle of the field. I would play more man coverage in Dallas just because Lee, as that miscellaneous zone defender out of the man coverage, is so potent. And yeah, so there was that. There was play recognition. He's been very good for them. Sean Lee in Dallas is my defensive player of week 8.
I got Khalil Mack, who wrecked that Bucs offense all day. For those of you who say Khalil Mack doesn't get enough sacks, he had 2 sacks today. He also had 4 quarterback hits, according to Stats Inc., along with 2 tackles for loss and a forced fumble. He had a monster game. I mean, the other thing about the Raiders-Bucks game, total offense, 626 to 270. And this was a game that was a minute and 45 seconds from ending in a tie. That's just weird. I don't really draw any conclusions from that, but it's just weird. Special teams player of the week. Who you got, Andy?
I'm going to go with Marquette King for the Raiders. I don't know if you saw Gary, but it was last week. He was about to punt the ball. He fumbled the punt and scooped it up and ran for 27 yards to pick up I think it was 4th and 22 at the time, something like that.
You could
a real improvised play, yep. And it stuck with me, and that's who I've got for my special teams player week 8.
You watch Cowboys-Eagles. You could have given it to Chris Jones for doing the same thing in Cowboys-Eagles.
Yeah, but his fake wasn't improvised. He didn't fumble at first. I thought about that. I thought, you know what? No, I like the Marquette King fumble better.
Not even the fact that Chris Jones is Jerry Jones's little-known third son.
Yeah,
one CEO, one COO, and they just made the other guy the punter. That's how it works.
I'm going to take Marquette King still. That's my special. You make me do right. This, I pick Marquette King.
I'm going to give it to a punter too. I'm going to give it to Shane Leckler, who the Texans won with defense and field position today, and Leckler was a big part of that. 4 punts, 3 of them 50 plus, 3 of them 50 plus net, and 3 of them pinned the Lions inside the 20 as the Texans win a defensive battle. Who you got for coach of the week, Andy?
My coach of the week, I did Jim Schwartz recently, and I would like to do his defense again. I know they didn't win the game, but it was an impressive effort. I could do Rod Marinelli for similar things. You did him a few weeks ago too, though.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go, and it was not a losing or winning effort. I'm going to go Sean McVay in Washington. Called the plays from up in the booth today. And the Bengals are, and I don't mean this negatively about Paul Gunther at all. This is just their style of play, and he coaches it very well. They're a predictable defense. They stay with 2 high safeties a lot of the time, and that can be difficult against a team like Washington because McVay and Jay Gruden, but McVay's the play caller, they do such a good job of calling plays against predicted coverages, and I thought that was on display several times against Cincinnati.
All right. I'm going to give it to Ron Rivera. Much needed win for the Panthers. They just looked they look like last year's Panthers, at least for a day. We'll see if that carries on going forward. Plus, Ron Rivera is a big Cubs fan, as we learned from a Q&A with Kalen Kaler at the MMQB.com last Friday. And his Cubs won tonight. So it's good to be Ron Rivera right now. And getting this award, Coach of the Week award from me, Topic 10, that's cherry on the sundae for Ron Rivera.
Okay, right up there with his 2 Coaches of the Year award.
That's right. It's going to go right on the mantle. We'll send him, one of my old T-shirts.
Give him the T-shirt that guy who didn't really earn it but is getting anyway. Give it to Ron Rivera.
They can, you know what, they can share it. They can do like everyone gets it alternating weeks.
Okay.
I think that's the only way to compromise.
Yeah, he'd be amiable to that.
There you go. And with that, Andy, that is our show. Thank you, as always, to our researcher, Jeff Irwin, and to the folks at Digital Media who always make us sound so good. And thank you guys for listening to this episode of the MMQB 10 Things podcast. You guys really are the best. Andy and I are desperate for human contact, so please reach out to us on Twitter, Andy_Benoit or GGrambling_SI, or find us on Facebook. We really do love hearing from you. Send mailbag questions, enter that contest, win a t-shirt, all that stuff. Remember to listen and subscribe to new and archived episodes of the MMQB Podcast with Albert Breer, the MMQB Podcast with Peter King, and this podcast, the MMQB 10 Things Podcast, wherever you listen to podcasts. That includes the MMQB.com, SI.com, iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, and other podcast providers. We will see you guys next week.
This has been a digital media production. Find your voice.
Tip of the hat to Albert, another strong edition of MMQB. Did you know your favorite team has a daily podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network? Steelers fans, we have you covered with Locked On Steelers. Cowboys fans, it's Locked On Cowboys. And Chiefs fans, it's Locked On Chiefs. You get the picture. Search Locked On, your favorite team. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcasts Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.